Assalamu alaikum, everyone, and welcome back to Vortex of Truth. My name is Seema Trumpy, and I'm delighted to have you join me on this Friday afternoon. Vortex of Truth is a show where we use fiction as a tool to spark empathy and create questions in the minds of our listeners as to what they themselves would do were they in the situations our characters find themselves in. We also cover stories that should serve as mild warnings or help to explain and allow listeners to understand the struggles that others go through. Today, we have two sketches lined up. The first called The Scent of Tea, a sketch that you might recognize from last week when it began at then, and the second called Let's Baby. These are both quite emotional sketches, and they don't end all too happily. Even so, we hope that you find benefit in listening to them and that they help you to view the world and the people around you more complexly. As I mentioned, our first sketch for today is called The Scent of Tea. Here we go. The scent of a perfectly brewed cup of tea surrounded me, and I immediately began to smile. No matter where I was, no matter how sore my heart and tattered my spirit, a good cup of tea always made me feel a little bit better. It was our ritual, you see. Every time we saw one another, there was tea. Even on the days when it was blisteringly hot and I couldn't bear the thought of even a hot meal, there was still tea. We met over a cup of tea, her and I, and now tea and she have become so intertwined in my mind that every sip results in an outpouring of memories with her at the center. I miss her dearly, this woman. I mourn the cups of tea that she will never sit across from me and drink, and I resent the fact that none of the countless cups that I drink are ever as sweet as those we shared. By the way I've spoken of her, you may think that we were friends. You may think that we were involved with one another, but that is not the case. We were sisters. We met when she was 18 and I 17. She had just finished high school while I was still struggling through my last year. By some stroke of fate, we had both decided to spend the day at a very popular cafe. I, being an early riser, had gotten there just after it opened and had cleared the table for myself. She, on the other hand, had arrived after the last seat had been taken. That is, except for the one across from me. I am not a friendly person by nature, and I have never looked approachable in my life, not even as a child. Despite this, she came up to me and asked if she could share my table. She was so bright, not even I could say no. We spent an entire day in that cafe, leaving only once the staff had begun stacking chairs on tables. That day was the first time that we shared a cup of tea. In fact, we shared a pot. We discovered that we had much in common, a passion for good books, wickedness, good humor, and family lives that left much to be desired. The cafe that we'd first met in closed not long after, but our friendship endured. We found other places to meet and share our days, some nicer than others. It became a game between the two of us to find the best and worst tea being served in town. Eventually, she even invited me to her home. We had confided so much in one another that she felt brave enough to allow me to see that, knowing that I would not judge her, just as she would not have dreamed of judging me by my roots. Even when she went on to university and I began to feel the stress of my final year of high school, we made time for one minute still. Those tea times became my safety blanket, and I clung to them, craving their routine in a time when everything else was chaos. Time passed, and we grew from girls to women. This was when the trouble started. My family, while dysfunctional, would never have dreamed of trying to marry me off, or perhaps it was that they didn't believe anyone would want me. Either way, I was spared the indignity of being evaluated like a product. My sister, however, was beautiful and charismatic, and her parents were the greediest people I have ever had the pleasure of meeting. Not content with controlling their daughter's career path so they could benefit from her salary, they turned their eyes to the money she could fetch them. My poor sister was badgered day and night. Anything that could possibly turn a young man off of her was tapped until the floor was gone. Many wonderful men did wish to marry my darling sister, but what they offered was never high enough to suit her parents. It was cold comfort that no one malicious managed to satisfy them either. I saw her withering before my eyes. The constant criticism, the effort of trying to meet the impossible standards she was being held against, and the craving she held for a true partner were eating at her. I began to make mad plans, drawn far and fast from the suffocating cage we were being held in, until we found freedom. One day, though, a miracle seemed to have occurred. The whole rich man had come to meet my sister, and such an uproar about it that the gossip had passed through the entire town all day before he arrived. I knew that my sister would catch the so-called prince's eye. How could she not? She was beautiful, and rich men knew beauty. I was right, of course. He proposed that very night. The miracle, however, was that she seemed to be as captivated by him as he was by her. I will admit to jealousy. I had been the most important person in my sister's life for the past 5 years, and it stumped how someone else to capture her love and attention. I soon got over it, though, still. Just seeing the happiness on her face made me love him a little, for her sake. My own home life was deteriorating around me as her happily ever after was being booked. I was born into a family that resented being tied together. My parents made a series of bad decisions that culminated in a pregnancy that brought no one joy. My father was forced to marry my mother, and my mother was shunned by her own family. This was born a very unhappy partnership, punctuated by numerous bouts of infidelity on both sides. Just after my sister's engagement, my parents announced they had divorced. It seemed that my mother had fallen madly in love, and she demanded a divorce from my father, who resisted not out of any desire to save their marriage, but simply because he refused to allow her to be the one to end things. The dubious honor of mediating had fallen on me, and as spies as I may have been, I did feel a duty to help. In all of this chaos, my sister and I really had time to make up. Tea time had shrunk from chats that lasted hours to 5 minutes stuck here and there with disposable cups in her hand. The divorce being finalized did not signal the end to my problems that should have done. It had left me homeless with only a week's notice, and I frantically began to search for a job and a place to live. A week before my sister's wedding, I had finally been allowed to catch my breath. I insisted on spending at least an hour with her, and achieved it through a combination of threats, trickery, and outright pouting. We spent a lovely hour talking about everything and nothing. And a few assistants at times, I chalked it up to wedding her. I was heartbreakingly wrong. My darling sister's wedding day finally arrived. I had longed to spend a period of time with her, to savor the last few moments we would have together. I was prepared to sacrifice my pay for my job and eat sparingly for the week. It would be worth it for the time we had together. But it was not to be. Her family refused to let me spend the night in their home. Best about it as much as they'd never taken to me. I did not possess the charm and kindness of my older sister and found it difficult to entertain them for my sake on the occasions that we were forced to interact with one another. In the end, I had to content myself with arriving at the doorstep an hour after dawn. It did soothe me to imagine their frazzled expression as I wrote them far too early. The first indication that something was wrong came as I was walking after the door. I could hear raised voices from inside, something that really occurred in my sister's house. Their family favored sarcasm and pointed comments as opposed to the knockdown drag-out fight that seemed to be happening behind their doors. When I was finally allowed inside, I went straight to my sister, concerned beyond words. She was a sensitive soul. The years of harsh treatment had yet to harden her heart against her family, and she still craved their approval. I was convinced that I would find her a shattered mess. Worryingly enough, this was not the case. More worryingly, she refused to tell me what had happened, dismissing it as a misunderstanding. This was the very first time that I realized all was not well with my sister, and it was already far too late. I wish that I'd come to her that day. I wish that I'd forced the truth from her. How I wish that I had said to her. Instead, I met her as a boy. My sister had always been talented at deception, such was the necessity of attractive homelands. She used her bright, happy smile to hide a wealth of ugliness that she had never before been able to see me. Not until now. By the time I found out the truth that the picturesque, happily ever after I had been imagining for my beautiful sister with a sham, she was irrevocably changed. One day, less than a year into my sister's marriage, I unexpectedly found myself at some free time and chose to visit her in her new home. She was alone, as she often was, her husband away on business. later, I would realize with horror that I had never been allowed to see her when her husband was in their house. We shared a pot of tea, as we always did. At the time, I was still happily oblivious and spent the afternoon chatting about complete nonsense. My wake-up call came after she excused herself to take a shower. We were still comfortable enough with one another that she simply left me to amuse. Assalamu alaikum, everyone. We're back after the break. This is Vortex of Truth with me, with Robbie, and we're busy with our first sketch called The Scent of Tea. Here we go. We shared a pot of tea, as we always did. At the time, I was still happily oblivious and spent the afternoon chatting about complete nonsense. My wake-up call came after she had excused herself to take a quick shower. We were still comfortable enough with one another that she simply left me to amuse myself while she got ready for the day. I barged in on her and I saw. I saw bruises, I saw scars, I saw skeletal frame. I saw my own failure. Right in front of my eyes, my sister had been suffering, unable to scream for my help. Even as I stood there, stupid with shock, she began to stammer out. She showed me over and over again that she was fine, but things had just gotten out of hand. She was so insistent. My beautiful sister, she was so determined to save me from what was happening. But I paid no mind. I'd seen far too much. I was determined to save her. And I was still blind to what I was going to be doing. That day, I signed my sister's death warrant. That day was the very last time I ever saw her. The next day, I'd been coldly informed of her death. I still do not know the true circumstances of my sister's death. I do not know if she died from protecting me, or if her husband and his temper had simply grown too wild. The scent of tea was once synonymous with happiness for me. It allowed me to relive happy times with my sister. Now, I live the illusion of that happiness for mere moments before my senses are overwhelmed with the heartache and despair of that day. Every cup I brew, as mourning my sister and you. Alright, that was The Scent of Tea, our first sketch for today, where we tackled the sadly not unheard of scenario where a young woman is lured into an abusive relationship and her loved ones either don't understand what's going on or delude themselves into thinking that they're mistaken. It's a sad truth that predators are often the most charming people in the room, having learned to camouflage their desires in order to prey on the vulnerable. In this sketch, we see this kind of relationship play out from the eyes of a very invested observer who is close and very worried about the young woman who's been trapped in a terrible situation. Predators often isolate the people that they abuse so as to control them and make them feel helpless. If a victim doesn't have a support system that they can turn to, or if they feel cut off from the support system that would interest you all too happy to help them, they're very much easier to manipulate and mold as opposed to pushes. Should you come across this kind of situation, ask. Maybe delicately, yes, but do ask. Don't ignore warning signs and bad feelings for the sake of keeping the peace. That's one of our traditions that needs to be left firmly in the past. In this sketch, we've also seen a ton of guilt from our narrator for the fact that she missed the signs. Our relationships with our loved ones should be bonds that we work to keep strong, and most importantly, we need to ensure there's honesty and communication at the forefront of these bonds. We need to make those two things our top priorities. Trauma, suffering, illness, all of these hardships are all too often suffered in silence by people not wishing to be a burden or feeling shame over what's happening to them. We need to embrace open communication with our spouses, our children, our friends, and our parents. It pays off far more often than it doesn't. So, today's sketch was a very sad situation that's been played out countless times, and it's something that we need to be looking for very attentively in our community so that we can stop it before it gets to the stage where we're looking at death notices and regretting what could have been. It's very, very difficult after a certain stage to try and remedy the situation, but if we catch them early, if we catch predators early, we can change lives. Alright, that's the end of our first sketch for today. We're moving on to sketch 2, which is called Letters to Baby, and as we said, also deals with communication very extensively, specifically in this case communication between a father and a child. Things are changing, and so our attitudes towards communication and freely showing love to one's children. But there was a time not so long ago, and to be honest, there are still spaces today where there's a mentality that believes that men should be emotionally expressive other than when they're angry. It's incredibly damaging to deny and suppress emotion that way, and most often what it does is calls the individual's loved ones to believe that their father or brother or uncle or etc. random male relative does not care for them in the way that they care for their other male loved ones. The idea that showing emotion is a weakness is entirely outdated, and we are going to be diving into the head of a man who chooses to express his love. And even his fear and met his inner child. Here we go. It's baby. Dear baby, I've been told that you're the size of a peanut right now. I can barely wrap my head around that. You're inside your mother, so tiny that you'd fit on my finger. And in less than a year, you'll be a baby. No matter what size you are, little one, you'll always have a place in my heart. You influenced me before. By the time you're old enough to read this letter, I'll be nothing but memory. I wish it would. I wish that I could toss these letters in a fire and know that I'll be there to tell you anything and everything you want to know about me. That I won't. Not as I'd still like to hide from it and pretend that I'm going to get better. The truth is that I am dying, my little one. I might even be gone before your mother gets to know that you truly are the little girl I believe you are. I have cancer, you see. There's nothing more that can be done to keep me hanging on in this world. There's no treatment, no cure. Perhaps by the time you read this, there will be one. God knows your grandfather has been tossing enough money at research. My father, your grandfather. He has always believed that he would die long before me. But as much as we can assume and plan, fate is not in our own hands. I have no choice but to give in to the disease that is destroying me. I am sorry. If I could hold on to you, I would. Truly, I would. I love you so much already, my darling. More than seems logical. More than seems possible sometimes. I know that you'll never fall short of that. You'll have an army of protectors ready to do your bidding. And before you can even voice those words, it makes it easier for me to know just how fiercely the people in my life will protect you. It makes it almost bearable for me to accept that I'll be nothing but a faded memory to you. Maybe it would be kinder to believe you as nothing to me instead of giving you these little scars. I'm so, so sorry, Nicole, but I can't do that. I'm too selfish to not want you to know me, to not want you to love me. I know that it will hurt you, just as it hurts me, to not know my father the way that I should have. And there will be no relief for you like there was for me. Although there will be no calling your father back to hurt you. I'll leave you a letter from me, telling you everything I could ever want to, until the day that was short life of life of mine run up. Today, I want to tell you the most important thing of all. I love you dearly. I would give almost anything to be able to meet you. Love, Daddy. Dear baby, I'm sure by now you're tired of reading things. Maybe I should have stopped at 15. But I can't. Feel free to not read all or any of these if you don't want to, sweetheart. So very selfishly, more for me than you even anything. Today was a very difficult day, baby. The pain is getting worse. There's only so much that can be done without drugging me into stupor. Your grandfather has taken to looking at me with such misery that I can no longer bear it. I gave in and agreed to let him hunt down little more special poking part of me to say exactly the same things. And I'm my family, they should prepare themselves. Can I tell you a secret? I'm afraid for your grandfather, as well. I know him, and I know just how still. But the traits he's passed on to me, perhaps one I've passed on to you as well, I don't know. how I wish I did. Your grandfather, my dad, has not accepted the inevitable. I'm terrified that he will not accept it until it's too late. I don't want my father to not say goodbye. I don't want him to lose himself in grief the way he did over my mother. Being with me, then I focus him on being a good father that helped him pull himself out of this the first time. In fact, you will be the one he pours all his love and attention into after I've gone. I did help him. It's funny for me, before, I had always assumed that it was a thing when your grandfather no longer loved me best. But the thought of him loving you best still brings joy. I would give you anything. Everything we wanted of baby. I love you that much. The same lesson, baby, is that your grandfather is a stubborn beast. But he loves you, and he'll do anything in his power to see you smile. He loves you almost as much as I do. I couldn't be happier about it. Now, Dad. My dearest daughter. Happy birthday, sweetheart. I was right. You are a girl. The prettiest, most perfect little girl I've ever seen. I didn't think I'd get to see this day, sweetheart. I was sure that I wouldn't get to. Not until the afterlife, isn't it? But I did. I've been granted the privilege of seeing you, holding you, even kissing you. You're early, baby. You were supposed to stay in there for another month and a bit, but you were determined to come out to meet the world. Other than that, to see you being born. I can't stand that long anymore. But I got to see you soon with your team now. And the nurses, they were nice enough to let me hold you. It was the one thing that I still wanted to do. The one thing that I couldn't let go of. Now that I've been able to do it, I have a feeling that the end is near. I'm so sorry, baby. I wish I could keep holding on to you for long enough that you'll at least be able to remember me as you go. But it's beyond me. I don't have strength, my darling. Today's lesson is that your daddy gave up. Now, my dearest daughter, it's going to be soon. Even your grandfather has made his peace with it now. I suppose I look too fragile for him to keep pretending. Writing you this letter has taken longer than I'd like to admit. I don't know what I'd like to do to you. I don't know how to find the words to express my unending regret, my overwhelming love. I love you more with every passing moment. And I finally understand my father's desperation to find me a cure. Thinking of no longer having you with me, I thank God that I will at least be spared the pain of having to watch you die. I still hold that hope for you, Mother Sweetheart. I've been promised that you will be protected by everyone. And I hold that hope that your mom will be able to look at you as lovely as the way that I do already. And I know with the utmost certainty you've already left yourself thoroughly aligned to your dad's heart. Surely, with all these people, you'll be all right. I'm no longer selfish. I no longer want you to love him. I know it will hurt. I don't want you to feel the loss of me. I love every little inch of you. And I need you to do something for me, okay? I need you to remember, I need you to know with certainty that you are loved. I need you to know that you're important. I need you to know that I never for a single second wanted to leave you. And I need you to be as happy as you possibly can be. There's no lesson for today. Life will teach you everything from now on. I still wish that I could have been there to do. But I have faith that on the day when everything is going to be judged, you and I will finally be together again. In paradise, we'd never have to get it. Love, death, forever and all. That's the end of our second switch. Latest baby, where we listen to the words of a man attempting to forge as much of a connection to his child as he possibly could, to make up for his lack of connection to his own father, not simply because he loved his child and wanted to leave that child something with him after he had gone. This case is fairly extreme, as it deals with terminal illness and the parent is a very, very young baby. But the bare bones of it apply to tons of situations. The connection that men have with their children, their families, their other loved ones, should not be downplayed or pushed under the rug. Rather, it should be nurtured in order to be healthily expressed. We find young men with anger management issues because they haven't been given the need to express their emotions in a healthy manner. We find men with self-esteem issues because they haven't been able to express their emotions that they're feeling without being ridiculed. We find marriages and other relationships that aren't functioning at their best simply because the emotion that is there and is felt doesn't get lost. It's a great disservice that we do when we ignore the legitimacy of emotions and attempt to sweep them under the rug. And this issue is something that we desperately need to be paying more attention to, so that it can be worked out the way that it needs to be. In our sketch, Lisa's baby, we have a man at the end of his life, at the very, very end of his life, and how because of that, feeling the courage and the power to express his emotions to his family. And we see that his own father, the grandfather in this situation, does love his son. But we also see that grief has torn long apart. We see that grief over a mother who died far too young, clearly, caused father to spin out of control. And part of the reason for that may be because we don't allow an expression of grief to be healthy for men. We expect them to have to stiff upper lip and to pull themselves up by their bootstraps and all of the other cliches that we have. And we just simply do not let them experience what they need to experience. For some reason, emotion is something that we think is a weakness, and it very clearly is not. Emotion is what causes us to commit the greatest act of our lives. It's emotion that is in play when a mother cares for a child. It's emotion that's in play when families sacrifice for one another. It's emotion that's in play when we strive and we attempt to make ourselves and our families proud of one another. Ourselves and one another. Emotion is, by and large, the greatest motivator, whether it's good emotion or bad. And while it is true that an overabundance of emotion can be dangerous when we don't use logic to temper that emotion, we cannot have one without the other. We cannot be logical without having emotion to drive us. We cannot live without having emotion there to make us care for one another. Because why else would we be kind, be compassionate, be loving? What if those things are emotional? And we know that emotion is entirely not something that we're meant to reject in ourselves. There's no, absolutely no evidence to suggest that men are meant to be lonely by neglecting their love and their care for their families, for their other loved ones, for themselves. We know that, you know, the blessed peace be upon him experienced almost all of the emotions, the pride in his own mind, he played with his children, he loved, of course he loved. And so why are we afraid then to use our emotions and to feel our emotions? And why do we think that we need to suppress them? Unfortunately, our culture has done us a very great disservice, and we do need to dismantle it. So, our speeches today were about communication and about experiencing emotion, and I'd like to reiterate for the final time that we do need to find a balance between emotion and logic and expression, and really we never need to use suppression of emotion. That's never going to be a healthy thing and ever part of balance. As always, Jazak Al-Akhir for joining us today, and we hope that you've enjoyed the show. If you have any comments, questions, or concerns, you are more than welcome to get in touch with me, Nima Travelby, at theimperfectmuslimablog@gmail.com, or under the handles theimperfectmuslima or Nima Travelby on all forms of social media. We hope that you have a lovely day further. Assalamu alaikum, and have a wonderful Ramadan. We will be having a 4-part series for the Truth for the month of Ramadan, and we hope that you join us for that. Assalamu alaikum, and have a lovely day.